Major Cochran, Real 15. You were telling the story about Private Roy and how he'd asked to shoot him, and then you met him again six months later.
When we were both being sent down to a convalescent hospital in Durban, and there he was in a cinema queue, was that I was also joining. He looked a bit sort of different round the face and so on, but there he was. And I said, "Well, Roy, are you glad I didn't take your word and shoot you?" "Oh," I said, I'm quite glad you didn't." My qualms about meeting his request were justified.
Now, anything else you remember about your time up on that hill? You were forward and back. Anything else while you were forward? We'll look at when you were back later, I think.
Well, the difficulty was that you had to talk to people individually. You had to crawl around in the dark from one lot to the other lot. Very much the same thing as a casino years later. You had to prevent chaps, half a dozen of them here, another half a dozen there, that they weren't isolated, that they were still all part of a unit.
So you'd tour the positions?
Yeah, you had to go for calling around. And then, there's no information you could give them. There we were, and there the enemy were, and bombs and the shells were still coming down. But at least you could talk to them about anything that came into one's head. Things nothing to do with the war. Ridiculous things. Did you ever, when you were a kid, go to the seaside on a holiday to Lee Sands or wherever you were? Anything that came into your head. Equally, they were doing the same thing for me, I think, the old chap. But as I said earlier, it's easier for the officer, I think, because he has duties to perform. He's got to think about other people, this, that, and that. And this takes his mind off some of what's going on. Whereas for the soldier, very often, he's got nothing else to think about.
And what would you say the overall state of morale was?
It was pretty good. I mean, these were, as I say, these were regular soldiers. This was their first experience of war. It was their first experience of a big battle. But there had been, we had been under fire before. It wasn't new. Also, the company felt very chuffed about having captured Catherine Ridge. So our tails were up over that.
Now, one thing you mentioned is being shelled by your own artillery as a problem. You seem to be quite understanding about the problems they had, but could you talk about that a bit?
Well, yes. Well, this is an aspect of mountain warfare, because the gunners, we had marvellous gunners, we swore by them. They have an FOO, forward observation officer, who's up with the infantry, up in the front line, and he's there to direct fire when there's a shoot. And one of the things, of course, like us, the enemy was tucked in on the rear slope of the mountains in front of us and above us. And the artillery now and again had shoots which were hopefully were going to disrupt their supply trains. And even some heavy stuff was actually going to shell Kerin, the village, the little town at the foot of the mountain, the other side of it from us, which would presumably be thought their command centre. But the field gun, the 18-pounder, was a marvellous weapon, but of course it had a low, fast trajectory, and you couldn't cock it up, name it up in the sky, and hope the shell would fall down at a certain point. Therefore, the instinct of the FOO was always to direct the fire, bring the line of the shells down a bit, in the hope that by having airburst shells just bursting over the crest, you'd get at the enemy hiding behind the crest. And inevitably, some shells, it may have been the freak in the explosive, some of them failed to clear the crest. And if they failed badly, obviously it was your own troops that got it. The other difficulty was when halfway down the peaks facing us, the enemy had forward positions on what for them was the forward slope. And helpfully for us, this is from where the machine gun and sometimes the mortar fire came from, would have been very helpful to us if these could have been hit by our shells. And so there again, and the FOO is looking at the shell bursts on the hillside opposite, thinks it's a bit too high, brings the line of fire down a bit, and without knowing, clips your own top. And of course, gunners, all gunners, in all my experience, are quite convinced that the infantry can never tell from which direction a shell is coming. These poor sods of infantrymen, they cannot understand it when they get shells amongst them. It's coming from the enemy. They will pretend it's us. Casino at Mountain Warfare, and precisely the same thing happened there 3 years later. And I think in mountain warfare, it's very difficult to avoid. The ideal weapons in mountain warfare are, of course, heavy mortars. Cock the thing right up and then right down. And we hadn't got heavy mortars.
You hadn't?
We had 3-inch mortars in the battalion, but they were useful, but I mean, they weren't massive enough to make a real difference.
Now, anything else before you went out for the first time? Because you went out to rest, didn't you?
We went out, and that was glorious. Well, we didn't go far enough first time and had to shove off and go a few miles further back because we found it was sort of an artillery range. But we had, they brought up umpteen trucks, we had lashings of water, enough water for everybody to clean, wash all the filthy clothes they'd been wearing. We hadn't been able to bring up all sort of battalion stores and issue clean shirts to everybody. But we could all go around Starkers while all our stuff was hanging out to dry on every available bush. The MT officer had quite illegally, I think, pretended or claimed that he was bringing up beer for the entire brigade. So we really couldn't tuck into in our clean shirts, and so plenty of beer, and I think he got some whiskey too.
Would you drink much more after an experience like that? I'm not talking about hitting the bottle price, but I mean,
all that much more to drink. I mean, yes, it sounds like a lot of beer, but in fact, I suppose what it amounted to was something like perhaps 3 pints a man. Really not enough to get screaming on. And we did have some whiskey, but I mean, that was a bottle of whiskey between sort of 8 people or something like this.
So more a sort of loosener than a drinking session.
Unwinding. And a lot of joking and leg pulling and... thank God we were there. Everybody knew we were going back there. That's why you didn't want, you know, the subject was changed away from action to any nonsensical thing you would think of.
You actually had some drill sessions. I was amused by that.
It amused me, but Watty Reed said, no, well, there's a nice flat piece here. I'll just show that we can smarten up and do something. So we did, and the jocks did this with perfectly good heart, didn't think it was absurd. Didn't go on very long. I mean, we just went through a few elementary motions, mostly arms drill. Just to show, really, that we could still do it, if you like.
Now, One thing, when you then went back up again, one thing I missed out rather was there a problem with snipers? We've discussed the you know, mortars and artillery, but what about sniping?
Yes, there were snipers. Of course, they could in the night get down into positions in which they are, if people on the forward, our forward slope, were certainly within range. And this is why you had to be careful that where your forward lookouts were was very well camouflaged. And in fact, this is why we sort of built plenty of them, so that the sniper wouldn't be quite sure which one was occupied. And again, things like you didn't need to tell people. I think they knew that the flash of light on a pair of binoculars was a sniper's prayer. This is just what he was waiting for.
Now, another thing, in the book, it just sounds like you were beginning in some ways to show some signs of pressure, because you got this little passage about how you started to get a bit obsessive about your helmet.
And
that's quite interesting, because it does seem to... Could you just say what you were thinking about and what you did at night?
This was in a mortar bombardment, but it was at night. Nobody could see me. And I used to think not much good lying flat on the ground with a tin hat on. Where would I least like to get hit by a mortar bomb fragment? My head, my face, or my chest, or my belly, or down to my balls. I'm a kind of think, oh, I think the player really, and I'd really like to protect my chest. So you shove the tin hat down on your chest, and then another 20 minutes more mortar. You know, I don't know, hold on my belly and push it down a bit, and so on. And I mean, this, if one knew this was damn ridiculous. If you like, your tin hat was the only defense you had. And having seen other wounds, you thought, well, you know, if you'd seen recently one in the belly, you thought, well, that's the last place I want to get hit, so you keep the tin hat there. No, it was a strain. And in fact, at one point, Andy, the CO, rang up on the telephone line. That, of course, was cut by mortar bombs so often. And night after night, the signallers from the signal platoon would relay phone lines. Because it was without small, portable wireless sets, the telephone really was the only way, because sending a runner down this hillside and up again, it would take about 2 hours. The telephone was invaluable. And Andy rang up and said, you know, how are you doing, Peter? How about coming down to battalion headquarters, which was on the railway line down there, for a couple of days? And I think he was very good of him to suggest this. But I think he knew there was no possible way you could say yes. I mean, the company was up there, and you were in the company, and you were with them as long as whatever it was lasted. So I thanked him warmly. He said, no, I was fine, and I'll come down when they all come down.
Now, anything else before you actually went into the attack?
I think, I think we were, well, we actually, I mean, when we knew it was coming, and then we marched up. Well, before we were marching up, all the officers had Andy didn't just have his O group, order group, you know, his gunner officer, his company commander. He had all the officers, which actually weren't all that many of us, in fact, by this time.
Now, what was an O group like, or that O group?
Well, that O group consisted, I say, of really all the officers in the battalion, in a huge number, including the second in command, who was in charge of the what was called B echelon. That's where whatever transport we had, the cooks, the storemen, those people got left behind. And any people who were not actually fit for fighting, but not bad enough. The MO said, no, keep them down here for a few days. So there were always half a dozen people who were having 3 days rest down there. The second in command had to be ready to take over command of the whole thing, but his immediate job was this, as I say, B echelon. And that, of course, in state of action, meant resupplies of ammunition and so on. It would be his company commanders. He'd want certainly his mortar crew platoon commander. And he would want, as well as the chap who commanded HQ company, which included MT, mortars, signals, pioneers, who were our sort of privates, engineers, sappers, mine clearers. He probably would want the actual platoon commanders of those specialized people. And in this case, I mean, it was a very simple plan because we were on the ground. And it was merely timing, and that this company was going to go for that peak, and this company was going to go to that peak.
Now, you were going for, it was Briggs Peak and Sanchula, and you were going for Briggs Peak.
Yes. Another company was going for Central. And a third company was going further left, I think I'm right in saying. And a fourth company was in reserve, and when we succeeded, was going to start being the carrying company. You never said if. I don't know, I don't think any of us, certainly I wasn't very cheery about the prospect, because I thought it was going to be like that first thing, up getting up Cameron Ridge, but magnified by about three in terms of height and steepness. It really was a very steep hill. Plus the fact that when you got to the top, there'd be a lot more than a couple of machine gun posts to deal with. In fact, I was as chap called James E. Cameron asked me before, would I take a letter she'd written for his parents? And I was rather tetchy with him and said, no, I certainly wouldn't. You'd better go and get somebody else who'd make a better messenger than me. But I wasn't really terribly cheerful about the attack. Mind you, gradually.
Was there any sort of real plan at all, or was it just to attack?
Well, no, certainly we had a plan, detailed artillery plan, with careful timings, and there was a...
what sort of barrage were you getting?
Well, there was... the idea was that there was going to be more or less just before, just at first light, every gun in the division was going to be shooting at the crests, and the... a certain degree of the forward, to us, their forward slopes, the ones that their machine gun posts and snipers were in, and that this would carry on for X minutes, by which time it was assumed that the infantry of us would have got as far as so-and-so. This was a brigade attack, of course. The brigadier's orders had included what the Indian battalion next door to us was going to be doing at the same time with their peaks as we were doing our attack on these peaks. One had to sort of sound cheerful and optimistic and all the rest of it. But I wasn't very happy about the prospect, I must say. I don't know anybody was, but if people were gloomy about what was going to happen, they kept it to themselves.
Now, your company arrangements were 13 and 14 platoon to go first and 15 after them.
Yes.
With company HQ behind them, I suppose. Now, what do you remember of the attack?
Well,
it was at 7 o'clock in the morning on the 20th of March, I think.
First thing, well, I had said to all my lot, I said the first thing we've got to go is absolutely like the hammers of hell, because the quicker we're climbing up their slope, the quicker we'll be out of their shell fire. It's our forward slope and the bottom of the dip that's going to be the trap. Don't give a damn for anything. Just go as fast as you possibly can after me, down this, across the dip, and start climbing the other side. It did mean, of course, that when we did start climbing the other side, we were pretty well out of puff. But at least we did miss the worst of the counter-bombardment, which our another company didn't. They copped it very badly by not being quick enough over this danger bit.
So you ran across, you didn't get many casualties now.
No, we got up to the slope of the hill and started climbing.
Now, how steep was it? Because from the picture in your book, it doesn't look, it looks like a mountain. It looks straight up almost.
I resisted an opportunity to go back and have a look at it. I'm not very keen on it. But it must have been at one point, it was difficult with the chaps with rifles because you really needed both hands. You were so far bent forward.
You were climbing, not walking.
And I suppose the easy bits were, what, 1 in 10. The difficult bits were getting back to some 1 in 5 almost. Therefore, you got slower, quite apart from being fatigued.
Now, as you started to go up the fire, what sort of up the hill? What sort of fire did you get on you?
There was machine gun fire. That wasn't too bad because we actually were up amongst them fairly soon, and I did the same old business: take the prisoners and just send them down the hill behind you. And I expect probably they got most of the Italians.
So they were on the lower slopes.
Yes. And then you went higher up, and the real danger started. But when you got higher up, our barrage stopped. And I think it stopped too soon, or it hadn't been realised how long it was going to take us to climb the hill. So there was a sort of eerie silence when we were still, the ones who were left of us, were still, 100 yards down the hill from where we had to be. And by this time, the Italians were throwing dozens and dozens. They emerged from, as soon as the bombardment stopped, naturally, good soldiers, they emerged from their sort of hiding places or shelters and began pitching downhill at us dozens and dozens of anti-personnel grenades. And these were very effective, and they could be thrown a long way. And these were bouncing around, they hit on impact, on anything.
They exploded on impact.
Exploded, yes. I'm sorry, when I said they hit, they blew up on impact. And if you were cutting a direct hit from one, it was enough to take an arm off. The most of the damage, though, was when they bounced on a stone, and you got bits of the metal casing plus the bits of the stone all flying up, sort of shrapnel-like. In fact, when we got up actually to the top, I think there were only three of us left.
So you'd suffered most of the casualties from hand grenades?
I think so, yes.
You mentioned mortars in the book. That was in the lower slope. So.
Yes.
But that not so bad for that. What about you had a lot of casualties. You lost most of your NCOs, from what I can see.
Yes. Well, the last one to go was Sergeant Horbury's replacement, Sergeant Ramage. He had one of these things right on his head. Actually, before he fell, I was next to him. Before he fell, took his tin hat off with his scalp inside him, top of his head inside him, and a sort of grey mess of his brain sliding down the side of his face, and then he went down. And I noticed this quite clearly, but I observed it, shall we say. Then the next thing was that I was up there with a private soldier, and the only thing I should do, so I thought, well, the only thing is go around the back of this peak and see what's going on with the enemy.
So you didn't go over the top of the peak?
No, the peak was just a rock pinnacle.
So it really was?
Yeah, there really was the peak. So we just walked. There was flattish ground just in front and beside it.
And there was just you and two others, or three?
Yes, and then I got hit with one of these grenades.
So what do you remember of that? Was that straight away when you got to the peak, almost, or...?
I got, yes, almost straight away. I got nowhere near getting grounded to see what was happening, and some chap with a good shot at fairly close range got one of these things. And it did go off near my, or perhaps even on my boot. And luckily, it was still, I hadn't got too flat, it was still fairly steep, because I had my forearm, I must have been going, climbing up with my forearm like this. And that kept the fragments out of my eyes. I got them in my arm instead. But I thought, even so, that I sort of came to after a few moments. Shock. And of course, as I said, when you are wounded, you don't feel any pain to start with. Just a huge sort of shock to the system. I thought I was blinded, but then I realized that it was gravel and earth, muck thrown up by the grenade, sort of filled my eyes. And I could eventually scrape through. And then then some second Italian, again, eerie silence, no shelling on our side of the road. Italian soldiers came. I could.
What had happened to your other two men?
One was with next to me. One I never saw again, and I think he may have been actually killed by one of these bombs. But a private soldier was next to me. Now, what was his name?
Webster.
Webster, that's right. Webster. And he had had one of these things gone off, and his leg was, knee was, I mean, you could see the bones were poking out. So he was lying pretty well beside me, half on top of me, I think.
So you were completely isolated?
Oh, yes.
But, I mean, then, because they'd gone.
Because, in fact, there was nobody left. Everybody had been wounded or killed on the way up. There wouldn't have been any point in going back again, so because he had to go through the whole thing all over again.
So you were lying there, wounded in the arm, half covered by Webster. And what happened then?
Well, I also, I could see, I mean, I was wearing shorts, and I could see sort of blood pumping out of my arm and both legs.
So your legs were wounded as well?
Yes.
And what happened then?
Well, the Italians came round, they picked me up. I think actually at that stage I still couldn't see properly, but I could feel them and hear them talking. And then I could feel myself being picked up, then I was carried round the back of the rock, Briggs Peak. And by this time I could get some of this muck out of my eyes. I could see a bit. I could see that Webster was also being sort of dragged along, since he couldn't possibly walk. And there we were. And then, very shortly afterwards, down came our guns again, crashing bombardment. Most of the shells sailing over the top and exploding down the other side. So, of course, one knew that the attack had been a failure, not just where we were, but the rest of the battalion, and almost certainly the battalion fighting next to us.